This episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Warfighter Hemp, whose mission is to provide our nation's veterans with organic, non-addictive, non-psychoactive means to manage pain, lower anxiety, and improve the overall quality of their lives. 50% of Warfighter Hemp's profits go back to veterans. In episode number 218, I spoke with Warfighter Hemp's founder, Steve, and since then, I've been a fan of both their company and their products. Warfighter Hemp is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners 20% off their first purchase using the promo code BTU20 at checkout. That's BTU20. Thanks and enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families thrive in their civilian career. Today's episode number 302 with ESPN's Sal Palantonio.
And it doesn't matter what job you're going to have in life, what profession you might pursue. If you have curiosity, your prospective boss or the people who are working around you will see that you are genuinely interested in their world and in the world in general, and not just yourself, that you will make a good teammate. And you will have the humility and the gratitude to perform your job in a team.
Sal has had an incredible career as a journalist, from newspapers to authoring 4 books to being a veteran of ESPN for over 25 years. With ESPN, he covers the National Football League for SportsCenter, Sunday NFL Countdown, NFL Live, and Fantasy Football Now. He also hosts the long-running NFL Matchup Show. While Sal's career has been in journalism and sports, he talks about curiosity, about finding information that no one else knows, about approaching one's job with the beginner's mindset, and a whole host of topics that are applicable to any career path if you're seeking to really be at the top of your game. Normally at the start of these interviews, I read the person's bio with Sal. Because we had limited time, I read his bio. I want to read his bio now. So Sal, as I said, is a national correspondent for ESPN. He's done over 25 Super Bowls. Prior to joining ESPN, he was a political reporter from 1985 to 1993, as well as a beat reporter for the Philadelphia Eagles from 93 to 95 for the Philadelphia Inquirer. In 1994, he won the Associated Press Sports Editors Award for reporting, and in 95, he was named Philadelphia's best sports writer by Philadelphia Magazine. He also served as a reporter for Philadelphia's WPHL-TV nightly newscast Inquirer News Tonight from 94 to 95, and hosted Saturday Morning Sports Page, a weekly call-in show on WIP AM All Sports Radio from 93 to 95. Sal began his journalism career as a reporter for the Albany Times Union, where he received the Associated Press Managing Editor's Award for Enterprise Reporting in 1985. He received the 2017 Jack Newfield Courage in Journalism Award from the New York Daily News. He is the author of 4 books. I'll put all of those in the show notes. He also obviously served in the United States Navy from 1979 to 1983 as a surface warfare officer in the Pacific Fleet, and was awarded the United Nations Meritorious Service Medal in 1981 for supervising the rescue of Vietnamese refugees in the South China Sea. He retired as a lieutenant in 1983 and serves on the board of the Cooper University Hospital Foundation in Camden, New Jersey. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss. And with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Sal. Well, joining me today on his way to the New York Giants training camp is Sal Palantonio. Sal, thank you so much for joining Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So the first question I had for you, I think everyone listening knows your most recent career, but when you first started out, you actually had an undergrad and master's degree prior to entering the Navy as a surface warfare officer. What led you to decide to join after completing your advanced degree?
You know, it was kind of preordained for a lot of different reasons. I have an extensive military background in my family. And my dad was 4F'd from the Korean War because of cataracts at birth. So he had extremely poor eyesight. And his two older brothers were in the Navy in World War II. And one of them, my Uncle Tony, was my godfather. And, you know, he basically explained to me one day at my birthday, I think it was my 12th birthday, if I remember correctly, in 1968, that he would like me to go into the military because my dad could not. And, you know, 1968, you're 12 years old, you care about two things, the Beatles and baseball. And you're not really thinking about much else. You know, maybe a little Joe Namath thrown in there. But, you know, 1968 was the doorstep of a lot of stuff that was going on in the world. And there were a lot of Vietnam protests. So the military, for a young person at that age, you know, you weren't really thinking about that as a career. So I went off to college. And when I got to Oneonta State, it was 1974, and the war protests were dying down. There still were some for the older students that were there, not for the younger. And I never participated in the anti-war movement at all. In fact, you know, I found most of it to be antithetical to my beliefs. So I never really fit into the anti-war movement at all. And it was pretty much dying down when I got there. But, you know, anti-military was very high in the mid-70s. So it was kind of unheard of for you to graduate college and to go on to, say, ROTC or OCS. That just wasn't a path for a lot of people of my generation. And I was a reporter at Oneonta State on the State Times newspaper. And I had a radio show, and I graduated with high honors and got a full fellowship at New York University. So I took advantage of it and got my master's degree, and then I went into the service right after that.
As you look back, is there anything that you learned while in the military that's helped you in an incredibly successful career in journalism?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Countless things. There are so many things that I learned in the military that helped me as a parent, as a husband, as a journalist, as a person. I think the most important thing is to act with humility and gratitude around everybody. And I think that that's one of the most important things that you can do in a military unit is be humble with your teammates, with your squad mates, with your division, whoever, wherever you are, your platoon, and to show gratitude for what you have in this world. Because when you go overseas and you see what the rest of the world doesn't have, you're just thankful that you live and work and grew up in and get a chance to raise your family in the United States of America. So that's one important thing. I think in terms of what you learn as a military officer, number one is proper prior preparation prevents poor performance. And that's something that I taught to my three daughters, you know, the six P's. You got to be prepared in life for everything, for every contingency. So we always used to say, I always used to say to my kids, have you done your proper priors before they go out the door? So, you know, and that imbues a sense of discipline, you know, that you learned in the military. So if you have that sense of teamwork, sense of discipline, confidence through preparation, all of those things, you know, make you a better person.
That's great. What about when did you first start thinking about journalism? It sounds like you were doing that prior to entering the military. Where does that stem from?
Watching the Watergate hearings when I was in high school, you know, I watched sports and the Watergate hearings. And, you know, And people say, well, you know, how? Why did you become a journalist if you're in the military? I said, listen, you know, the military is about protecting our rights as Americans. And the most important right is the freedom of speech. And so for my entire life, whether it's in the military or as a reporter, I have been a believer in the Bill of Rights. And the first one is of course, the most important one. That's why the founding fathers made it the first one, the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the freedom of the press. And, you know, as a member of the military, I think it's extremely important for people to realize that when you go overseas, the first thing that you see is that people do not have a Bill of Rights. And, you know, we're serving to protect our rights here in this country. And that's what I've done as a reporter, and try to exercise those rights and what I thought my right is, what my job was as a member of the military.
That's great. That's really powerful. And I love, for listeners who might be considering various career paths, I love this strong sense of purpose, this strong sense of mission, and how what you're doing started out as directly aligned with your values. I just imagine that gives you so much more leverage in what you're doing, so much more passion and so much more drive, because it is so foundational to who you are as a person. That's really, really compelling.
Well, you know, the meaning of America is rights and justice. That's what separates us from all other countries, most other countries in the world. And, you know, we fought for the liberation of Europe from a dictatorship. We fought for the liberation of peoples in the Middle East, in Southeast Asia, wherever it is, we're fighting. We've always been a military fighting for liberation, not annexation. And that's a key difference between us and the rest of the superpowers that have roamed the planet over the course of human history. We've never really been anything other than a country that's trying to protect people's rights and get them back from those who have taken them away.
That's great. Could you talk to us about what does your life look like right now? I know that many listeners would love to have your career. Could you take us through what a day or a week might look like for you and the types of things that you're doing?
Sure. So I'm literally on the doorstep of starting my 25th year covering the National Football League for ESPN, which is pretty cool, right? I mean, totally blessed to have this great job. It's not how I started out. My first job out of the Navy was at the Albany Times Union in Albany, New York. I covered local politics and government in the Capital District region. Then I got hired by the Philadelphia Inquirer to be their national political reporter and covered state and local and national campaigns, including 3 presidential campaigns. And then I got moved to the Eagles beat by the Inquirer in 1993. The editor there, a very famous man and a very accomplished journalist by the name of Eugene Roberts, who had a plan year to year to move people around to keep fresh eyes, fresh reporting eyes on different stories. He was a very big believer in covering sports like he would cover news. So he moved some of his top people. And I got lucky enough to get picked to cover the Eagles. And shortly thereafter, ESPN hired me. Bang, zoom. Got lucky. Right place, right time. Mm. And that's what I've been doing. So, you know, the month of July, I spend as much time as I can reconnecting with my family, because I know that when this third week in July rolls around, I'm on a string of 27 straight Sundays where I am covering a team somewhere doing something. And so I prepare just like anything else. I'm preparing to go to Giants camp, then Eagles camp, then Jets camp, then Patriots camp, then back to Eagles and Giants. And I'm doing an I-95 tour at the beginning until things start to open up and stories start to open up. And then they move me more around the country since I'm the senior person. So I start talking to people, specifically coaches, some front office people, some agents, to find out what dormant storylines might emerge the first day of Giants camp. It'll be easy because I know the team, and you got a quarterback controversy between Daniel Jones and Eli Manning. And then Eagles, it's all about Super Bowl or bust in Philadelphia with Carson Wentz coming back from two truncated years due to injury. So that's what I'm doing. And then, you know, I go to a camp and I'm live on SportsCenter and NFL Live throughout the day doing reports. And it's pretty heady and cool stuff.
Is it, you know, having done this for so long at just the top echelon of this field, when you're on camera, I mean, is there any preparation or thought, or is it so second nature now that you're just showing, you've trained so much that you're just showing up and just executing?
No, it is. I treat each live shot like it's literally the first time somebody is going to be seeing me. So I want it to be as fresh as possible. I want it to be in the moment as possible. I want the news to be as good as I can get it. My dad was a big fan of Joe DiMaggio. And, you know, Joe DiMaggio always tried to handle himself on the field with the utmost respect for the fan. He was asked about it in his career, and he always said it was always because he knew there was somebody out there watching him for the first time, and he always wanted to make a good first impression. And so that's the way I handle it on the air. You know, I want to come across like this is the first time this person is seeing me, and I got something to say, and I know how to say it to them.
What a incredible mindset to cultivate for listeners, whatever their career path is, of not letting oneself get into a rut or to get them into habits, but taking that fresh approach. I think that's really beautiful. I know that, or I imagine that many listeners, and they could be people on active duty, they could be military spouses, they could be veterans who've been out for a dozen years. But I imagine that some of them aspire to a career in either media or journalism. What advice do you have for someone wanting to pursue that sort of career?
Well, you know, journalism is just an extension of being a very curious person. You know, we're all journalists about our world. We're all curious about what's going on. It's just a question of what we're curious about. And so if I was a reporter about the National Forests instead of the National Football League, I would approach it the same way. I would try to find out as much as I possibly could about what's going on right now at the National Forest, whether it's a shortage of rangers or, you know, overcrowding or, you know, litter or, you know, the trampling of the parks. Whatever the news is, you just have to talk to as many people as possible to find out what's going on. Use your eyes and your ears, ask good questions, take good notes. And try to tell people what you found out. I mean, anybody could have a blog, anybody could have a podcast. The point is to delve into the subject in a way that makes it interesting and new. You know, the root word of news is new. So wherever you're telling people, it's got to be new, or else they'll change the channel on you pretty quickly.
I love that, and I love that value of curiosity, of having those questions, and even the way you portrayed this as like such a transferable skill where you could cover anything. It's the same approach of curiosity. And one piece of that I wanted to ask about is is your network? And, you know, most of the time on this show, network means something different. But, you know, for you, your network, I'm imagining, is it's executives and players and coaches. And I imagine you have to really have a lot of trust in those relationships with the teams and the front offices to be able to get information from them. How do you approach that, building those relationships, maintaining that integrity, and having those close ties to be able to get honest answers?
You know, it's like nuclear weapons discussions between two countries. Trust but verify. That's the bottom line. I teach young students about journalism and broadcasting all over the country, Scholastic broadcast camps. I do broadcast boot camps. I teach it as an adjunct professor. I have taught at St. Joseph's University on a pretty regular basis up until a couple of years ago. And I get invited to lecture to students, and I give them, you know, the basics are so important, because I think these days right now it's important to go back to basics, and you got to, one, ask two good questions. Two, you got to take good notes, because not everybody has a photographic memory. And three, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. In other words, you know, there is no piece of information, even your mother saying she loves you, that's not worth checking out. Get another source, you know. And people always chuckle when I say that. They laugh, but it's true. It doesn't matter what it is. You have to have a second source. And getting back to your question that sparked this discussion, when I was teaching sports journalism classes, I would assign the first day the students in the class to write a paper about Jell-O. And they would always look at me like I had five heads. And I would say to them, if you can tell me about Jell-O, you can tell me about anything. You can tell me about going to the moon. You can tell me about hitting a home run. You can tell me about hitting the open man if you're Tom Brady. So I want you to find out about Jell-O. And that's all the instruction I would give them. And the papers that they would write would be fascinating, what they would come up with and the approaches that they would take. And you could tell really fast, really clearly, really quickly who had the chops, who had the curiosity chops. Because you can teach communication, right? But you can't teach curiosity. And it doesn't matter what job you're going to have in life, what profession you might pursue. If you have curiosity, your prospective boss or the people who are working around you will see that you are genuinely interested in their world and in the world in general, and not just yourself, that you will make a good teammate, and you will have the humility and the gratitude to perform your job in a team.
I mean, there's so much there that I appreciate, and I love this thought in your work with the Scholastic Broadcast Camp around the basics being so important. And I love this emphasis on curiosity and what you said about always showing up as if it's your first time. And I just want to highlight for listeners at the start of the program, we read your really impressive bio. And what I respect about you, Sal, is, I mean, you have done so much in the world of journalism. You mentioned ESPN, it being the right time, right place, but you were doing stories, you were showing up, you were exercising these muscles day in and day out for so many years that when that serendipity was there, when you had that moment with ESPN, it worked out. But I would just challenge listeners that worked out because day in and day out, Sal was showing up as if it was the first time. He was applying that curiosity. He was using those basics. He was doing the reps. And I imagine that made a tremendous difference in that meeting with ESPN going the way that it did.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, you know, it's hard to teach somebody to be a journalist, but it's pretty easy to teach them how to be a broadcaster. And so you're right. I mean, I did have those journalism muscles built up, but it's pretty much like any other profession, where you do it over and over again, and you understand what it takes to get the story and get to the and get to viewers or readers in a way that's compelling and interesting. Over and over again.
And, you know, one thing I'm just wondering is, I know a lot of listeners have talked about challenge and failure and just the setbacks that we all experience in life and in our career. I think the temptation when viewing someone like you, where there's so many things to admire about your career, is to maybe gloss over and imagine that it's all been easy. And I'm wondering if there's any challenge or setback or failure that you've experienced in your career that you'd be open to sharing with our audience and what you took away from that, just to dispel this notion that, you know, everything is easy or everything's a breeze.
I think the most difficult setback would have to be, you know, after I covered the 91 campaign for mayor in Philadelphia for the Philadelphia Inquirer, I was trying to figure out what to do next, and I decided to take on a really big project, and that was to write Frank Rizzo's biography. And Rizzo was former mayor, former police commissioner of Philadelphia, one of the most famous in urban American history, who died in the middle of the 91 campaign for mayor. And I felt like when I covered that, it would be the last big story that I would ever cover. And so I just decided, you know, instead of trying to find something else, I decided to make what I knew bigger. And General Eisenhower used to say, if you can't solve a problem, make it bigger. That was one of his favorite sayings. The other was, the idea is to keep moving, whether it's an army or in life, just keep moving forward. And I remember listening to his speeches and reading his biography. I was always a big admirer of his. And so I used that as a way of saying, okay, now what's the second act? And as a result of writing that biography, I took a different path that wound up going into sports, because the editor of the paper said, well, now you've done the biggest possible thing you can do. It's time for us to move you into a completely different direction. And that's how I wound up at ESPN.
That's so incredible. I mean, I love this thought of, I just imagine at the time that was a thing that challenged you. It's got you out of your comfort zone. It caused you to have to be more and to be a better writer and really push yourself. And I admire that. And then I could imagine an alternate universe where you just coasted off of that. And instead you took on something that at the time was very different, and it's led to where you are. So I just appreciate from that story how you were out of your comfort zone and not playing it safe, that you were really pushing and challenging yourself.
Well, you know, Frank Rizzo was the biggest character in the city's history, and I was given the assignment of writing about him and covering him and reporting on his campaigns and his life. And he died on my watch, July 16th, 1991. And, I thought, okay, well, that was the biggest story I'm ever going to have. And then I had to figure out how to make it, you know, how to do something that no one else had done. So I took a complete step back and wound up writing a 185,000-word biography. That's a biography not only of his life, but the life of the city politic in Philadelphia, dating back to the 1880s, as well as the Italian-American experience in America.
And you've gone on, you've written four books now. I'm wondering what advice you have. We've had a few authors on the show, and I know many listeners are interested in that path. What advice do you have for aspiring authors, or anything that you found help you maintain that discipline of writing 185,000 plus words?
Well, you know, there are different stories. I wrote Frank Rizzo's biography. I wrote a book about football that was called The Most Overrated and Underrated. Then I wrote a book about football called How Football Explains America, which is being repurposed, by the way, for the 100th anniversary of the NFL, which is this year and next. I'm on a Hall of Fame selection committee. And then I just wrote a book about the Eagles championship season, which, you know, dovetailed perfectly, symmetrically, because it happened in the 25th year that I covered the team. So all of those experiences were different, but there's three basic things that you have to be able to do to take on a project like writing a book. One is, as Jimmy Breslin said, go take a walk. What does that mean? That means you're not going to buy, you're not going to write a book by sitting at a desk. You got to get out in the world and interview people and see things. And again, take good notes and ask good questions. And then secondly, you got to write about what you know. And the only way to know things is to get out and take a walk. Don't write about something you don't know, because it'll be very evident at the very beginning that you don't know what you're talking about. And you won't have any kind of story or structure or character development or anything like that. And three, the very famous romance writer Nora Roberts was asked, what is the most important thing a writer should remember? And she said three words: ass in chair. Sit down in the morning, put your tuchus in the chair, keep it there until you write 2,000 words. Writing is work. Treat it like that. If you don't sit down and write, then if you keep getting up, then you'll have nothing on the page.
I love that. I love that. Is that kind of the mantra you kept? Was your goal to have at least 2,000 words a day as you were writing these books?
Yes.
That's great.
Right. So for instance, not in every case. Some were harder than others. Some I had little children running around the house. This last, and I had, you know, different deadlines. But in this particular case of the last one, the Philly special, the inside story of how the Eagles won their first Super Bowl championship, the Super Bowl was over February 5th. I got the contract. The deadline for the book, which came out to 90,000 words, was April 12th. So do the math. That's, 45 days, 90,000 words. What's 45 times 2? Oh, God. There is 90. You got to write 2,000 words a day.
Oh, man.
If you don't write 2,000 words on Wednesday, you got to write 4,000 on Thursday.
That's incredible.
It's geometric.
You know, one thing, and I'm a little bit shooting from the hip here, but I would just love your perspective on the way that journalism is changing. And, you know, on the one hand, I'm excited because we live in a time where anyone can post on YouTube, and anyone can have a blog, and anyone can have a podcast, and anyone can be their own celebrity. And at the same time, I'm like mourning this, where it's like, God, it feels like everyone is shouting and no one is listening and no one is having depth, and just everyone feels like they should be on TV. And I'm just curious your thoughts on, like, for, you know, maybe someone's getting out of the military right now and they want to start a career in journalism. What are your thoughts on, you know, going a more traditional route versus starting a YouTube channel, or just the way that media is evolving today?
Right. So you hit the nail on the head. If everybody's shouting, it's harder to be heard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to set yourself apart, especially if you want to get paid to do this. How many podcasts are there? I know the number because I recently looked it up before I got on this podcast. Do you know how many podcasters there are worldwide? 660,000 plus, growing every day.
Yep.
Okay. So just think about the difference. But when TV first started, when television first started, there were 10 channels, maybe 10 available. Now people have so many choices, blogs and podcasts, YouTube channels and Instagram, Facebook. They're bombarded and shouted out from every corner of the universe. So the only way to separate yourself is to be different. And the only way to be different is to be curious about the world and tell people something they don't know. One of the things that I like to do on the set of the show that I host, the Matchup Show, I've been hosted that show for 18 years on ESPN. It's called the NFL Matchup Show. I have two analysts on, Greg Cosell and Matt Bowen, and I've worked with other analysts, but they're the latest two. I always like to tell them in the meeting, before we go on the air, tell me something I don't know. And when I'm doing that, it's not to be a smart aleck. It's because I'm taking on the role of the viewer. Because the viewer these days knows everything, or at least they think they do because they have access to everything. We live in a world where people have never had more access to information. So you have to tell them something they don't know. And the same thing is true in any walk of life. Tell your children something they don't know. Tell your spouse something they don't know. Tell your boss something they don't know, and they'll give you a raise.
I love that. I mean, I just love that point of differentiation, of adding value, of thinking different or being different. And you're right, like, this is an age where people have never had more immediate access to more information. And so it gives me even more respect for what you're doing, that the amount of work you must have to do to uncover that new information and to be able to communicate it efficiently. It's an incredible skill set to have.
I have the advantage of having the platform of ESPN. when I retire and get my boat, the back of the boat, the name of it is going to be Four Magic Letters.
I believe it. Well, I know we are short on time, and I always just like to leave the last question open-ended. And, you know, I've asked this on over 300 interviews. I always ask for, you know, what have we not covered that you want listeners to know? And I feel like it's even more important, Sal, for you, because looking at your bio, it's such a daunting challenge to try to think of, like, how to use this time efficiently to get things that would benefit our audience, because there's so much we could cover. So I'd just love to turn the last question over to you. What have we not covered that you would want listeners to know before we wrap up?
A lot of things in life are overrated. Being a grandfather is not one of them.
That's beautiful. I've got a 6-month-old son here.
I have three grandchildren, and I love them. It's great.
That's wonderful. Well, Sal, I appreciate your taking the time from a crazy schedule to connect with me and the Beyond the Uniform audience. And I appreciate, as a fellow military veteran, what you're doing in the world to show military veterans achieving great things in the world. So thank you for both of those things.
Yeah, it was totally my honor and privilege. I'm glad to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you, and more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org. There is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.